All right. And we are back with another episode of A Businessman's Guide to Almost Everything, the show where I, your host, Cole Brzezinski, get to sit down with folks from a myriad of fields. We got to talk about what makes them tick, some of the challenges they face, and in today's particular circumstance, some of the uncomfortable realities that they have to live in. So today with me, I have Logan. Mm-hmm. Logan, where are you from? What do you do?
Well, originally I'm from central Wisconsin, but I've been out here in western Washington for 7 years now. Just say thanks for having me back, Cole. And I'm the community director at Growing Veterans, and just trying to get as many veterans involved in our community, and then also get out into the community and kind of let people know where veterans are at in today's society and kind of what we need.
No, there we go. It's a great start. So I already made mention, I want to break apart some of the myths and unpleasant realities about your industry, but you guys are not-for-profits that are focusing on veterans. And unfortunately, I imagine that there is no shortage of unpleasant realities that has to do with veteran affairs after service.
Unfortunately, yeah, there is. And it's great because, like, communities, society, they really want to help and support us. But then when it comes to the agencies that should be putting these things into place and funding these things, seems like there's a shortage in that department.
So without going into too much detail, I suppose, as someone who left the service, reintegrating into regular society, however we want to define that, what was that experience like?
You know, I think the one that really kind of like sticks out to me, and I can speak from personal experience, is coming home from my second tour of Iraq. This is back in 2010. And I came back, unfortunately, to a divorce, an empty house. And, you know, I was living in Arizona at the time. So like I said, I'm from central Wisconsin. I didn't really have any family or friends there. All of a sudden I'm done with my mission. So I'm not with my squad, with my platoon every single day. You just find yourself instantly alone and just kind of getting connected. And then the thing is though, in the military, there's a unhealthy culture of binge drinking. And so then when you get out, and you're trying to find community, unfortunately, sometimes this ends up being based around alcohol. So when you're getting home, you should be finding community and trying to get healthy and get your head right. And what's on my plate next and in life? Sometimes you kind of like turn to the bottle, or, you know, and you think that you're making connections to other veterans in that manner. So it's a really difficult transition because there's no playbook. And when you join the military, you're given that purpose and belonging. And then when you get out, it's just like, it's on you. Like, you got to go find your purpose and belonging. And it's a difficult thing to do because a lot of us joined, right? I joined in my, during my senior year of high school is when I enlisted. My senior year of high school was when September 11th happened. And so I hadn't really become a member of society yet. You know, you're a kid, like school, maybe athletics, you know, after school events or clubs or what your life is about. And you haven't really become a full-fledged member of society. You know, you're not voting. You might be paying taxes, you know, if you get a part-time job in high school and stuff like that. And then you enlist and boom, you're gone, you know. And it was like 2 years after I enlisted, I was in my first tour of Iraq. And then 5 years after that one, I did my second tour. And in between there, I did a 2-year mission on the American-Mexican border. And so there was just a lot of time away from friends and family, in uniform every single day. And then all of a sudden, boom, like you're just like dropped into the middle of society. And like, you don't even really know who you are yet as a person. And so that's the difficult, I think the thing that I think a lot of veterans have the biggest difficulty with is when they get out of their active service, they don't even know who they are.
Right.
And so then trying to figure out the world when you don't know who you are, it can be defeating.
And it's it's such an intimately personal journey that is at the same time incredibly widespread. It's one of those ones where it almost seems crude to say, well, the government should have an answer for this. I mean, the government's going to have a easy process for an 18-year-old kid who just left high school, who's given his life to a very specific kind of lifestyle, very specific kind of mission, and just reintegrate them naturally. I'm not sure that is something that you could just put into a little handbook, give to everyone after they leave the military, and, you know, good luck, you're going to be great now.
You would think that there would be some sort of exit plans or exit strategy. But then I guess too, you know, we watched unfold on television just a handful of years ago, right? Our exit from Afghanistan, and it was eerily familiar to our exit of Vietnam, right? Yeah. So the military doesn't really have a good history of exit plans. And so with veterans getting out, you know, they spend millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to recruit kids to come in. And then whether it's just a 4-year enlistment or 20 some years down the road, you're retiring. It's just kind of like, here's your paperwork. Here's like your final award, you know, your kind of like final thank you. And hey, best of luck to you out there. And that's what it kind of felt like after my time when I retired. It was just like, man, like, where do I go? What do I do? What's next?
Yeah.
And so you have all these kind of like third party nonprofit organizations that are popping up now, being founded and managed and operated by veterans, because we realize the people who are going to probably take the best care of veterans are ourselves, you know?
So typically when someone leaves the service, what into whatever capacity that they were in, what are the resources that they likely know of are available to them?
The VA, you know, that's like the big one that pops out. And depending on maybe where they're getting out, depending on what state too, there might be, you know, some brochures of local organizations. But I mean, it's, you know, I'm deeply in the veteran community now, you know, working. And it's on a daily basis that I am finding organizations that I didn't even know about. So there's so many of them out there. And it's just the fact that I don't think a lot of them are able to get, you know, on post to promote themselves or get the opportunities to get on post maybe and find veterans that are retiring or exiting.
So when you say post, are you referring to social media posting?
Oh, no. a post, you know, like, you know, Joint Base with Lewis Murray here in Washington State, you know, any post like that, military post. And so I know that there's some organizations that can get on there, but I mean, we're still finding out. I'd say it's every day. It's like you receive a phone call, an email, you talk to somebody walking down the street that's like points to your hat or points to your shirt. What's Growing Veterans? Tell me about that. Yeah. We've been here for 13 years. So that shows you can be right in the community, and without the right resources and connections, veterans are not going to hear about us or hear about the opportunities.
It really does seem like veterans that come out of the service, they have to put in a lot of legwork. And at the same time, you have a lot of not-for-profits who are always working extremely hard to build up that awareness network, to just get in front of people in the right ways at the right times. It's a tremendous amount of work on both sides. And it's a tough place to be, no doubt.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's one of the big things that we really hold in high esteem is when we host events for veterans or do our Friday coffee check-ins is we make sure when people are telling us about the challenges or issues right now, getting them those resources, whether it's a card, a website, a phone number. My first time I was out there, I was just struggling to find community. And then a couple of the staff members were like, well, hey, did you go through the whole VA process to try to get like a rating, you know, for, you know, your VA disability to kind of help you financially? Well, I had it plugged into my ear from like some of my leadership during my time in service. It was like, well, you didn't like, you know, that's for wussies. And like, you know, you're going to, you know, take handouts from the government or like, you, this is what you did in the service. And like, you didn't deserve that. So like you get it in your head that maybe sometimes, oh, I don't deserve these resources or this support. So mm-hmm. then you don't go that way. But then I got out there. They're like, what are you doing, man? You know, some of these guys are sharing their experiences with, in their time in service. And they're like, if I'm getting, you know, these benefits for my service, you definitely deserve it. And then they kind of changed my perspective on that. And then they're like, here's a card, you know, call this person. She's going to help you. And I mean, it was life changing. My first time out on the farm, just searching for community. I found belonging. And then they empowered me to go get the benefits that I deserved for whatever reason I didn't think I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. That must be a huge mental block that everyone has to overcome at one point or another. Or I suppose they don't have to. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a challenge.
And I think it's for some people, it's like, maybe it's tough to swallow their pride or something like that. Because right, some of the people you meet in the military, they're the most fit, you know, they're the most intelligent. And some of the jobs that they're doing are just mind blowing, you know? And so you see the cream of the crop in the military. And then you find out like, oh, they didn't go to the VA to get a rating. Right. And if they were doing all of this high speed, crazy stuff,
who am I?
Yeah. Exactly. Like my service doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. No, that's. Yeah, man, I got things to say about that. I want to circle back to that in a minute. I want to talk about the farm specifically for a moment, though. One of the reasons why I'm sure Growing Veterans, along with just about every other not-for-profit out there, is not running TV ads, is because that takes a tremendous amount of money, money that you guys probably don't have, not at least in spades. So when it comes to the financial challenges that you guys have, what are some of the ones that people might not think of when it comes to running this farm and running a veteran support group?
Well, I think one of the things they might not think about is some of the money that's coming in there. You're supporting veterans' families. Mm. Like you're supporting disabled veterans being husbands, raising children. And that's a word I don't even like using because that's that disabled, you know, that's the term that the VA puts on us. So, but that's something I don't think they think about is this, like the humanizing us is like, hey, look, I'm not asking for a ton of money. Like I just want to put a roof over my family's head.
Yeah.
I want to be able to feed my child or, you know, my family. And I want to keep the lights on. And so some of the other things that people might not think about is the ability then to hold those events and spaces like our peer support training, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I shared last time we've lost some funding for that. Mm-hmm. And so not getting funding for that, all of a sudden now we can't give those skills, you know, that prevents us from giving more those skills to more veterans. Because I feel like the more veterans or the more people in our community that are peer support trained, when veterans go into crisis, and it doesn't even have to be a veteran, it can just be anyone who's experienced trauma, right? Because when you look at our curriculum of our peer support training, really what it boils down to is somebody who's gone through a traumatic experience and how to talk to people when they're having a tough time accepting that traumatic experience. Mm-hmm. And so this is the peer support training, I think, is a skill that can go, you know, can be learned by anyone, used by anyone. Mm-hmm. And it just creates a kind of a more welcoming, open, transparent, vulnerable environment. And because you really got to be transparent and vulnerable to do a lot of that moral injury healing.
Mm-hmm. Moral injuries. Can you unpack what is a moral injury?
The moral injury. So, right, they have these religious beliefs, moral beliefs, ethics of the way they should live lives and conduct themselves. They get into the military, and all of a sudden you're asking, you know, hey, we're going to activate this infantry battalion. We're putting them here, you know, and you're going to be kicking doors in and searching houses. And the matter of the fact is that there's going to be lives lost on both sides in situations like that. And all of a sudden you might have a person who grew up in Georgia and he grew up a Southern Baptist and he really had these strong morals. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, he was asked to do it. He's like doing it in the protection of his country. But then at the end of the day, he's got to go home and think about, man, I pointed this rifle directly at somebody. Mm-hmm. I shot them. They are no longer on this earth, yeah. whether they're the bad guy or not. Because unfortunately, too, there's situations that you witness overseas where all of a sudden, like, you're realizing, oh, we misread the situation. These were innocent people that are, you know, and that's just, unfortunately, some of the casualties of war. Yeah. And so that's something that really sticks to people, right? Whether you were the person behind the trigger or not, sometimes just witnessing a moment like that, you're just like, oh man, they were coming here looking for help, but because they did and said the wrong things, we ended up shooting at them.
Yeah.
And so that's something I think that's really hard. So that's kind of moral injury, right? It's more of like, you know, really hurts your heart, your soul. It's, you know, PTSD that can come from physical injuries as well, but moral injury really comes down to, I think, like, damaging your own soul because of something that you really held near and dear to yourself, a belief that you had, and you went against it. But you talk to a lot of veterans who struggle for moral injury. A lot of them might have been in situations, well, it might have been me or it might have been them.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, they probably be like, well, I'm glad I'm still here, but that doesn't just make that memory, that moment in their life disappear.
No, I counted a privilege to have grown up in communities with so many veterans. Like, I went to a church that was effectively a military church, just a lot of folks that went through the service and came out. And I remember the stories that we would hear, and like, powerful, strong men of good conscience, God-fearing men. And it hurt to hear the stories and the ways that they would have to tell them, not because they did things that were wrong necessarily, but just with the weight that these events had on them. It's not exactly the time and place for those kinds of stories, I suppose, on a business podcast, but touching back on something that you made mention of, it's how so many in the military communities, they end up finding God to some capacity. I'm sure that takes lots of different shapes and forms, but I remember someone explaining once about why specifically the Israelites way back in biblical times, oftentimes it was instituted that should certain laws be broken, there would be a stoning, but the stonings weren't ever done by one single person. It wasn't a one man execution force. It was the whole corporate body that would come together. And it was one of the reasons why was because you never knew when the killing blow was struck. Mm-hmm. Everyone in the corporate community took a piece of that moment. It was never burdened on one single person, because that is a tremendous weight for someone to carry for the entirety of their lives.
Absolutely. And that's we're offering a space at Growing Veterans where if you're carrying that weight, come to our farm. You'll find brothers and sisters that are willing to carry that burden with you. You know, that's why we say, come to our farm, be transparent, be vulnerable, open up to about your experience, because it's not your, you know, you had a country ask you to go do what you did. The country should be here to help you, you know, carry that burden. And that's what we're offering at Growing Veterans, is you're not in this alone. You know, we can help you carry this burden.
No, absolutely. And it really is a testament to just how powerful that is, because you are stronger when you are in fellowship with other people. The amount that you as a corporate body are able to take on when it comes to that emotional toll, it is exponential. It's not just two people being able to carry on the weights of two people. No, those two people are able to support a third and then a fourth. And then that grows and grows and grows. And it's why veteran support communities are so frequent. There are so many of them of different stripes and colors, and it's because they're needed. They're needed in different forms, because not everyone is able to find that fellowship in the exact same forms as others. But it's still needed, and it's always corporate. It's always with other people.
Absolutely. You know, community, I don't think I realized personally how important community was until just like the last, I don't know, I've been here since October, so 8 months or so, and I'm realizing how important it was. And, you know, there's a part of my life where I'm just like, I'm fine being a hermit or shut in or whatever. I'm like, I'm happier by myself, you know? And the thing is, though, it's like, I think it's important sometimes for veterans to seek solitude, But sometimes the solitude, right? A moment of solitude can slip away into isolation.
Yeah.
And then I think it's tricky to know when you've gone from seeking solitude into dwelling in isolation. Mm-hmm. And then when you dwell in that isolation, that's where that mental health can get wacky. You can get in your own head. And since you're not talking or opening up to anyone, it's just everything in your head. And then it's whatever maybe you're consuming via your phone or TV, whatever's on the news. Mm-hmm. And it's a bad place to be, isolating yourself and distancing yourself from everyone.
No, I'm glad that you emphasized that point, because that moment of isolation, which at times can be necessary, it is so easy for that to become an existence of just isolation. Mm-hmm. And that's a different story at that point. So we've talked a lot about the veteran community and how it comes together and how it needs, people need that fellowship in order to survive, almost in a certain sense. But you have found yourself in a position of leadership, and that must come with its own unique toils and struggles and challenges. Can you tell us some of the emotional challenges that you face that are unique to you as a member of the leadership of a veteran association?
Oh yeah. I kind of consider myself an empath. I'm a very empathic person. I show a lot of empathy, but I feel so deeply. It was from my teaching career is when I really noticed that, working with the student population that I did. And then so say like, on one of our Friday coffee check-ins, when we have a veteran that shows up and all of a sudden they're just like, they're ready to open up.
Yeah.
They're ready to talk about their trauma. They're ready to talk about their substance abuse. They're ready to talk about, maybe their arrest or their divorce. And some of those things I've experienced myself personally. But then when they start kind of talking with that raw emotion and being transparent, I absorb a lot of that, like I was saying, like, hey, it's your burden, or it's like, it's your burden. Let us help you carry that. Mm-hmm. And that comes with the environment. It comes with the job that you are going to open yourself up to some people's worst times, worst days in their life. And there's an energy that is carried through those. But I think when those people can open up and I can kind of be there to offer that space or hold that space for someone who needs that peer support, you can feel it, them become a little lighter. Mm. But it sometimes weighs me down emotionally. But the thing is, the beautiful thing, Cole, is that I work with a handful of amazing other dudes right now. Mm-hmm. And we have an amazing president, Jesse Border as well, that we can turn to each other and we can just openly talk about our mental health and being like, hey, I'm having a rough day. Or, hey, I just talked to so-and-so about this and it's brought this up in me. And so we have our own support system daily there. Mm-hmm. So if I go home, and I have a rough night, well, for whatever reason, things are coming up with me. And I say something rude then to my wife, or I maybe use a tone with someone that I shouldn't, and then I'm feeling bad about it. And the next day I can come to work and I just don't go sit at my desk and sit there and be like, hold it in. It's amazing. I can come to work and be like, hey, Cody, hey, Roderick, like, mm-hmm. Hey, can I sit down and talk with you about something? Mm-hmm. And so the fact that we're there for each other every day on a social and emotional level, I'm willing to take more of that on, from veterans that are finally ready for that healing journey. Well, I felt like in my teaching career, mm-hmm. I'd have students that would come and share those things with me. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have those healthy outlets or a team that I could turn to help me process those things and navigate what I'm feeling. But in this situation, I do. And it's, I don't know, it is the most amazing place I've ever worked. Mm-hmm. And it's the first place that I've worked where your mental well-being and like your work-life balance is a priority. Mm-hmm. Now, I know there's a lot of places out there that say, oh, we want you to be, take care of, self-care. Yeah. and find that work-life balance. But it's virtue signaling. They like to say it, but they don't need, you know, they don't put it into action. Here at Growing Veterans, our staff and our volunteers, we put that, you know, we put our money where our mouth is.
Yeah. That's brilliant. So I feel like we've hovered around this topic a little bit, but for those who are maybe less involved with veterans, because maybe they don't have them as much in their family, or maybe they just don't associate with as many groups like Growing Veterans, what do people need to know that veterans need right now?
What we need right now, we just need our community to welcome us, to understand that we've lived, you know, depending on how long you were in, you lived a different culture, you had different traditions, a different communication style. Mm-hmm. So us reintegrating to society might be a little rocky. So like, just have patience with us. Ultimately, what we want to do is belong, and we want to give back to our communities. And so I think it's just like that openness and understanding. And I think if you don't have immediate family members as veterans, you know, I think the best thing to do is educate yourself about veterans. And the best way to do that would be to come to the farm or find another veteran organization in your community and just go be a part of it. Mm-hmm. Most veteran organizations now are open to civilians or volunteers. And so just getting involved any other way and just seeing that we're humans that are seeking love and acceptance, just like anyone else in this world, ultimately. And there, you know, there's stigmas that, you know, obviously there's unfortunately a lot of mental health challenges veterans are facing, substance abuse. We're facing a housing crisis, not just for veterans, but in the entire country. And so there's just all these things that, you know, veterans are also sometimes looked at as maybe violent people as well. And so just coming and connecting with veterans and whatever stigmas or stereotypes that you might have towards veterans, the best way to unlearn them is just to come be part of a veteran community. Mm. And I think ours is one of the best to see in action.
So just be there.
Just being there for us. 'Cause it's just like, we were willing to do whatever it was that our country asked for us. And all we ask for our country is just take care of us when we come home. Welcome us back. You know, there's it's like a welcome home Vietnam Day, right? They have a day on the calendar because so many of them weren't welcome back when they came back. Yeah. And so it's just welcoming us home, and accepting us for who we are and where we're at. But you know, a lot of us, we want to continue to grow as people. Mm-hmm. And there's times, you know, I can say in my military service, and then maybe growing up in the Midwest in a blue collar community, right? As a male, it was walk it off, rub some dirt on it. Like, you know, quit your crying. I'll give you something to cry about. You know, that's kind of the same kind of like culture around males in the military too. It's just like, shrug it off, man. Like, let's keep pushing on. Just like, you know, bury that deep, man. Mm-hmm. You know? And so just being able to just share your emotions, and not being judged for it. And I can tell you that in the last 4.5 years of my sobriety, I think the last 4.5 years, I've cried more than I did like the previous 36 years. And I think a lot of that comes to seeing that there's bravery and courage and showing those emotions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want my son to grow up seeing, you know, me expressing all my emotions and feelings, you know, but when it comes to maybe like anger or frustration, I'm doing it in a constructive way. Yeah. Because through my time growing up and through my time in the service, I didn't see a lot of my role models or leadership dealing with anger and frustration in constructive ways. And so that's something that I think all veterans are probably working on too. Mm. And, you know, it's, you know, just don't be embarrassed of your emotions, man. Like, you know, wear them on your sleeve if you want to, or find the people you're comfortable with sharing those, but there's no need to hold them all in.
I think that's a brilliant way to end this episode. Logan, thank you for joining me today. Where can people find you, and where can people get connected with Growing Veterans?
All right. Our farm is physically located at 6458 Martin Place in Linden, Washington, 98264. There's our address, but growingveterans.org is our website. Look us up on social media, you know, just on Facebook, Instagram, search Growing Veterans, and you'll find us.
Brilliant. Well, Logan, thank you for joining me today. And thank you, dear viewers, for joining us for this very important episode of A Businessman's Guide to Almost Everything. We look forward to having you back one more time with Growing Veterans. We're going to have Cody back, and we're going to hear a little bit about his story as well. So until then, folks, take care and be well. We'll see you next time.